Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Chronicles of Nannia, a nanny resource podcast made for nannies by me, a nanny. I am your host, Martha Reddick, and this week I am very excited because I have asked Danny LeBrec to be on the show. Danny is the creator and, I mean, star, although it's kind of an ensemble of you and all of your puppets, of Danny Joe's Treehouse. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Martha. Hi, everybody. Hi, nannies.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on the program.
Yeah. Danny came and spoke at Nanny Palooza, and I fell in educational love.
It was mutual.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed your talk. And I thought to myself, I think my listeners would really enjoy to hear this as well. And then also at the end, we'll talk more about how nannies and listeners can find out more ways to interact with you and see more of your work. So that's very exciting as well. But before we get started talking about all of that good stuff, let's hear a little bit about your background.
Sure. My full name's Danny Joe LeBrec, Daniel Joseph LeBrec, and born in New Hampshire, and had a lovely, lovely childhood. We at one point started homeschooling.
Wow.
Before it was called homeschooling, it was home study at that point. And we had lots of social outlets, lots of community theater, and we all grew up, my sister and I, we grew up taking ballet classes and other types of dances. And really, you know, we had lots of outlets. So the whole, homeschoolers and social thing, that's not necessarily true.
Right.
but depends on the homeschooler, I suppose. But I bring all of that up because there was also a period that was kind of rough in early childhood, where we had a lot of big things happening in our lives, big transitional things. My mother had cancer for a long time, survived it, but it came back, and strokes came along, and it was a really hard time for us, hard time for the whole family.
That is.
And and there was a period where I really needed an extra adult voice, and for me, I found that in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Fred Rogers.
Yes.
Just an amazing individual, and really stood out from all of the other. There were plenty at that time, plenty of other live action shows, but there was something about that person and the other people in that program that I just knew they were real.
Yes.
I knew that it wasn't a show, that it was sincere, and it felt like he was really talking to me, and the other caregivers on that show were really connecting with me, and I carried that with me for a long time. And jumping ahead recently, my adult life came back to that, and realized, you know, there really isn't a whole lot of live action caregivers in children's media anymore.
No.
It's mostly animation, really good animation. But there's a ton coming down the pipeline now, but very, very few real human beings. There are a few out there, but you know, and I've met quite a few of them. And often they're put in a position where, you know, it's almost a caricature of themselves.
Right.
A very happy, almost constantly happy version of themselves. And certainly there are programs that have been, you know, grandfathered in, you know, shows like Sesame Street,
mm-hmm.
and Reading Rainbow. Mm-hmm. LeVar Burton is now doing his thing online and just doing amazing work.
Yes.
But it's still pretty tricky to find. There are a few out there, but I think there needs to be a lot of caregivers in our media, especially today, because we live in the digital age, interactive digital age. And it's, I think it's really ironic that, now that we literally have these screens, or these screens that we can literally talk through, not just pretend to talk, you know, to the child at home, but we can actually do that now. I think it's so strange that we're offering something that, is often false, you know, based in good stuff, but that connection isn't there. So for a long time, I started studying how to become worthy of taking on a task like that. So I began in the arts, but was drawn into early childhood development and behavioral science, and started experimenting with what my version of a children's show slash program might look like.
Wonderful. And I remember from Nanny Palooza that you spoke about living in Chicago, which is where mm-hmm. this podcast is based out of, and working at the Field Museum, which is so wonderful. I love the children's area of the Field Museum.
The Crown Family Play Lab.
Yes. Yeah.
I was part of the team when it first came into being. It was being developed for a while, and just before it launched, a few months before it launched, I got brought in to the team
mm-hmm.
For the development of the curriculum that we would be using in the space, and it was just an amazing opportunity. I was already working within the museum, in the education department, doing outreach with schools and family groups and developing field trip curriculum and family curriculum. But this was going to be very focused and essentially taking the big, big museum and making it accessible in one place for the youngest audience and their families. And I absolutely loved my time there. It was so much fun to work with the scientists and hear what their areas of study were, and then, you know, boil that not down, but make it developmentally appropriate to have a conversation with your young child about these huge ideas. And it was challenging and really exciting and hands-on and play-based and just wonderful.
That is, and I can say, because I am a member at the Field Museum, and so I take nanny kids all the time, and my goodness, you and your team did an excellent job. That's one of our favorite areas.
Well, thank you, and I can't say me and my team. It was a lot of other people that were leading the group there, and I got to play my part.
Right,
It
turned out.
I was
well.
Very proud to be part of it. Yeah, it's a great museum. The big museum is amazing too.
Yes.
Yeah. Not to go too off point, but I was recently substituting actually at my daughter's school, and they're talking about indigenous peoples
mm-hmm.
and living descendants, and a concept that I learned at the Field Museum for understanding anthropology, people and their cultures, mm-hmm. is this great idea called common concern, different response. And it starts with this almost like a bullseye, visualize a bullseye. And in the center, in the middle circle, you think of the very basic things that all people need, like, you know, shelter and clothing and food and things like that. And then in the next ring, it's called a common concern, different response. So common mm-hmm. concern in the middle, different response. And depending upon where you live in the world, what your environment's like, what your resources are, your response to those common concerns change greatly.
Right.
And after those things are established, you start to, as human beings, we start to think about big, big why questions. You know, why are we here? Where did we come from? What is birth? What is death? You know, and traditions and belief systems and philosophies start to, come out of that.
Right.
But at the core, it's a common concern. And we have all of these beautiful, amazing ways of responding differently, mm-hmm. to these things. But it's when you think of it that way, it's not about a separation, there can be a lot of different ways to understand what it is to be human. And I think that's something that's a concept that often gets lost in our current age in the media that we see, both fictional and non-fictional. We talked about that in the classroom.
Yeah.
But it's these extremes of, you are either this or you're either that. You're either on this side or you're on that side. And if you're on that side, I don't like you, and vice versa. And we're so much more complex than that as human beings. And I think we need to talk about that more and model behaviors that show how to engage with one another and resolve tensions and conflicts, and maybe not always come up with this wonderful solution. That's
right.
Hard. But it's not about getting to the end. It's the process. It's not hurting yourself. It's not hurting others. It's being together on this amazing earth and appreciating each other, I'm constantly worried that's, even though I think the majority of human beings are on the same page, we can appreciate and coexist, that the media influence shows the worst of us.
Right.
And paints a picture that is really quite depressing. And not to sound naive, I'm a grown up.
Like, right,
I understand that there's, awful things happening in our world. But it's, there are so many of us that are passionate and caring and thoughtful and want to work with one another and understand each other and grow together. And I think we need to present that. And I think we can present that in children's media. I think it's important to do more than just, as wonderful as it is, more than just the academic stuff, the shapes,
right,
and colors, and even the basic, developmental strategies that, all the dramas that every young person deals with, things like separation anxiety and potty training and all that really, really important stuff that's huge in a young child's life. But to understand that there are a lot of young children dealing with all the big world issues that us adults deal with too.
Yes.
But they don't have as much experience to cope. And we really do need to present them, even though, we want to shield and we want to protect, of course. But those big action events, they seep through and they connect, and we need to be able to support in age appropriate ways and talk about things directly. We can do that.
Yeah, let's speak more to that. We can go ahead and move into that part of it, because
okay,
that was something that really got my educational ears perked up. In your talk at Nanny Palooza, which, just a quick plug for Nanny Palooza.
Yes.
If you, as a nanny, are able to go next year. Next year it's going to be in California, so West Coast. Nannies, get ready. It's going to be in Anaheim. But it was such a rejuvenating experience for me as a nanny. I came back with so many strategies and more resources of humans like you, Danny, and then also all of these other amazing nannies that I met there that, you know, you can go and say, like, man, my nanny kid is really struggling with, like, sitting still at the dinner table. You know, what are some strategies that have worked for you all? And it just is a wonderful community and a wonderful experience. So if you have the means to go, I highly recommend taking that time. It's a good use of your resources to go. So, and that was how I met you. Yes, yes. Back to fostering connection and compassion with our nanny kids. What are some strategies that you have or you've seen work with helping kids foster a connection?
Yeah, well, I worked for a long time I taught in the preschool classrooms too, and I studied early childhood development and the guidance approach, all the good school stuff.
Right.
And then you take that and you try it out in the classrooms and you make a lot of mistakes, but you learn from those mistakes. So I have those experiences. But I also looked at, because, you know, part of my work was not only interested in working in the classrooms, but also working through interactive screens. So I wanted to find a method that worked, you know, through both the live presentations and through the screen. So I looked at, going back to Mr. Rogers, you know, what seemed to be his method for communication, just watching the old shows and looking at the teachers that I admire most, the ones that I studied under. And there were these common factors. And the first one was, and painting this under, you know, in the moments where something unexpected is happening.
Right.
So, like we all go through our daily routines, but again, I call them action events. And, an action event can range from, first conflict with a peer, you know, doing parallel play and then going into co-play and then, you know, fighting over a toy for the first time. Like that's an action event to me.
Right.
But there's a common daily drama, but there's also the huge ones that affect our shared community that maybe kids experience through firsthand experiences, and maybe it's through secondary experiences, but it still connects with them in one way or another. Think of all of the awful recent tragedies that we've been, experiencing as human beings, the Las Vegas shootings in Puerto Rico and places like Baltimore and Chicago and rural areas too, there's daily shootings there. Right. There's very real violence that can affect us and our children. I think of the action event and, So often, people say, think of the child first. That was actually a huge thing that Fred Rogers used to say, think of the child first. And I absolutely agree with that. But I think it's also really important to, before diving into trying to support a child that's experienced something overwhelming, to take just a second, if not more, to try to center yourself and think about, how you're being affected by that action event too. So,
right.
if you're feeling really sad or angry, is that going to come out in your reaction to a child that's seemingly acting out in a way that's unexpected and possibly frustrating and you know, socially unacceptable, and you don't know what the root cause is yet. And, you know, sometimes if we jump right into it with a, what are you doing? You know, with the tap on the hand or the timeout chair, you know, those sort of strategies, they might stop the immediate behavior, maybe, but, you know, there's no opportunity to engage or grow or really understand what's going on. And the lesson that's being sent is, I'm bigger than you, I'm more powerful than you. And, you know, if you want to get attention, you know, use a physical solution.
Right.
And that's not effective in my book. So I think it's important to take that moment to be like, okay, I'm upset. Just take a breath. Just at least one breath.
Like
is
we
enough
tell
to
our
slow,
kids to do too.
Do all the stuff we tell everything you needed to learn, you learned in kindergarten, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, take a deep old breath, you know, and then say, okay, I'm feeling upset, but I need to help my child that I'm taking care of. And then step in. And just a second to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, our brains are pretty fast. Yeah, you know, just a moment to pause if we can. And it's hard to, it takes practice to do even that. But to center ourselves is kind of the first step. That's what I try to do.
Yes.
And it's hard, and it can be hard.
But
to do that,
put your metaphorical oxygen mask on.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you know it's funny because that you know visualizing things like that, it really does help a lot. Whatever little trick you want to use, mm-hmm. I often tell the kids to take out their imaginary balloon mm-hmm. and blow it up 3 times. Until it inflates, and then give it a squeeze and hold onto it, but don't let it pop. And then float up and rise above and look and see what's happening. And then when you're ready, let the air out. and even just talking through that, seeing that in your imagination, the imagination is really powerful, you know,
yes.
that can help so much to actually see it in your, mm-hmm. in your mind's eye. Like just talking about it makes me feel calmer right now. I was talking really fast and I'm realizing that I'm kind of chilling out right now.
Yeah.
Centering yourself and then listening. And the type of listening that isn't just, you know, with adults, you know, so often we're just waiting for our turn to talk.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And for children, when working with children, it can often be the same. Same sort of thing. Oh, I know what I learned about this in school, or I've been through this situation before. I'm going to say A, B, and C, mm-hmm. and you wait for your opening, and you jump in with your strategy that you've learned. And the strategies, you know, are probably really important and effective and tested. But listening with your ears to what they're saying, how they're acting, if they don't have the words yet, the sounds that they're making, the facial expressions, you know, observe with your eyes too. Watch the play that's going on, the dramatic play that's going on. Watch the body language. Like, you know, pause for yourself and then pause again to really take a look at what's going on. If it's something immediate where, you know, they're about to hurt themselves, physically hurt themselves or hurt someone else, you know, jump in and remove from the situation.
Right.
But once everyone's physically safe, let it play out and watch for a little bit and just hear, just listen. And that can be another very challenging thing for us to do as adults. Cause we might not always like what we're seeing and what we're hearing. But that kind of leads to the next thing. Which is, accepting, like truly accepting whatever that child is putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to do a little bit of detective work, you know, because again, young children don't always have the words. It's kind of like, you know, solving a puzzle, you know, or working from the Rosetta Stone, you know, you really have to decode it. You have to figure it out. But once you do, you might not like it. You might not like what's being said and what type of play is happening. And it might make you feel uncomfortable. It might be socially unacceptable, but accepting the child where they're at in that moment is really, really important. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think so often, you know, you know, think of the child that's like uncontrollably crying and just so overwhelmed with emotion over something that maybe seems like, you know, something superficial and not really important to us, but to them in that moment, you know, it's, you know, that block tower falling over, it's very real. And it's, and those emotions are absolutely real. And saying, oh, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, you know, that's us, that's our, you know, that's us being uncomfortable. We've got to accept that this is where they're at and just be with them, you know, and if that means holding them, if they want that, that's fine. Or if it just means giving them the space to let it out, you know, we need to do that sometimes too. Mm-hmm. And if it's angry feelings, and again, drawing the line where, you know, there's no hurting of others or self, but, you know, if they're saying something that is upsetting, you know, understanding this is a moment in time. Like we all get, we've all been there when we've gotten very, very angry. And sometimes we've said things that we didn't mean. But it's coming out of the heat of the moment. And that happens with kids too, you know? So knowing that this moment is going to change and evolve and just, again, reassuring the child, letting them know whatever's happening, not necessarily by saying the words, but I accept you. I am with you right now. I love you no matter what. Even beyond love, I might not like the way you're acting right now,
right,
but I'm still with you. I'm still here for you. So that absolute acceptance is really incredibly difficult, but it's something that we need to keep practicing.
Yes, and is something that I think a nanny or a caregiver is perhaps, and this is not always true for me, but perhaps slightly more equipped to do, since there is slightly more distance than the mother and father of that child. I think a lot of times, at least I have sometimes observed, a mother or a father, there is this reflection of them that they're putting on the child that as a caregiver, we don't necessarily have quite as much of this. Like, if my child misbehaves, it reflects badly on me. And so I think holding space for them to experience, you know, even scarier emotions is an important thing that a caregiver can provide when perhaps a parent is struggling with that.
Sure. And potentially for a lot of different reasons too. You know, right. The nice thing about being a nanny or another type of caregiver that's with the child, you know, not all the time, is we get to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we get to
we
say,
get to
see
recharge.
You later. And you know, the parent that goes to whatever type of work during the day or working at home with a child during the day, they're still dealing with all those big emotions too and whatever action events that are in their lives. So, you know, they're carrying all of that with them too. I mean, we're, you know, all of us, you know, regardless of what our roles are and what our jobs are and our training is, you know, like we can all, you know, we do all go through these ups and downs emotionally. But I do agree with you. I think having a little, it can be, depending on the day,
right.
easier as a nanny, as a caregiver to have that distance, and make that space for that type of, acceptance. And sometimes it's not.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then being forgiving, you know, to yourself,
yeah,
when it's not.
Sure. So just to go through my little checklist here. You know, you're going through the acceptance stuff, and then trying to empower the child the best as you can through finding solutions and testing solutions, or testing potential solutions, and that doesn't mean, like, you know, so often we want to fix it for our kids whether they're our own children or children that we take care of, we want to say, well, you can do this or this or this. You know, you can try sharing. You can share your toy, or right. Say how you feel, or use your words, or all the fun little strategies that we plug in. And those are great. It's important to teach those, but I think it's also nice to step back and become a guide. You know, the type of educator that isn't just lecturing, but is presenting an environment to engage in the process of thinking, not just telling someone what to think and how to think, but here's a space for you to work on finding the answers for yourself. So, what do you think we could do to solve this problem? And that sort of language, definitely with an older kid.
Yes.
Or with stuffed animals. Teddy seems really upset right now. I wonder what we can do to help Teddy. What do you think we should do? And empower the child to make some choices. And again, drawing the lines. If the choice is, say, two kids are fighting over that truck in the sandbox, and the choice is, I want to throw sand in their eyes. Well, no, that's not a good choice. What's another idea? And if the other idea is something that only a young child could come up with, like, I'm going to sit on this truck and I will dig this hole for my friend to sit in, and they can sit in the hole and put sand in the hole. As long as both parties are okay with that redirection, great. Let's test it. Let's see if that works and makes everybody happy. Let's try that out. Let's see. And if it doesn't, then we try something else. But it's a process. It's not just a, you're either this or you're either that. It's working through the conflict. And, so that, when we're not around and something like that comes up again, not only do they have the choices that we give, the strategies that we hand to them, but they also have the ability to come up with their own strategies.
Yes. For more of a step-by-step guide to that process, we have an episode called Conflict Resolution. That kind of goes through guiding that at first, and then how to kind of be more hands-off with conflict resolution. And it's almost identical to what you just said. So,
oh, cool.
Wants more details on that, there's a whole episode about just that.
Nice. I'm making a list of all the episodes I need to listen to. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you see these sort of approaches in all of these different places with lots of different caregivers and guides, because it works. It's not copying somebody else's stuff. It's just that. In a way, sure, you learn from your mentors, you learn from the people that you admire, but there's rhyme and reason to it. There might be slight variations on an idea, but the heart of it, it works.
But yes, and it is. It's so important to help kids learn to do that for themselves, to not come up with the solutions yourself as an adult. And holding that space for them to really think through solutions. And even if it seems like a silly solution, if both parties agree to it and it's safe for everyone, then yeah, go with it.
Right. And silly is the right word, because it's also another thing that I think of throughout that whole process, whether I'm in a classroom or if I'm doing it online, is using the language of the young child, which is play. Mm. Dramatic play, co-play, sometimes violent dramatic play. Like, it's all acceptable. It's all the safe place to practice what it is to be an adult. It's one of the reasons why I use very traditional hand puppets, sock puppets, teddy bear puppets, my own new little puppets that I've been making that have a face, but they're not super animated. The child projects their own thoughts and ideas and feelings onto characters like that, so that you can have a deeper conversation without overwhelming the child, you know, an adult talking, you know, face to face, looking in each other's eyes about these sort of things. You know, we do pretty okay. It can be hard for us too. Mm-hmm. But an adult looking down at a child, or, you know, even if we kneel down and make the eye contact, you know, it can be pretty intense. But if we redirect it and put it into a play-based sort of thing, or reading about it in a really good children's book where there are these secondary characters that we can live vicariously through, you know, that's a very safe, abstract place to explore big ideas. Over the past couple of years, I've been thinking a lot about the idea of our subconscious selves and our conscious selves and how the two work really well together. You know, mm-hmm. If you're having a crazy dream, you know, we all know often, you know, if we have a rough day, some sort of a experience during our day that we just haven't been able to figure out by the time it's time to go to sleep, our subconscious kicks in and we have these surreal dreams that maybe in the moment don't always make sense. They're, you know, abstract. But when we wake up for a second or two, if we look at all the different pieces and we start to analyze that dream, we're finding some answers. You know, our subconscious is working it out, and that can affect, you know, our conscious experience and, right. and vice versa. So it's this dance back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And kids do this so well. They're masters of it. You know, it's like, I always blank on what it's called. What is it when you're in a waking state in a dream where you're controlling the dream?
Oh, lucid dreaming.
A young child playing pretend is like lucid dreaming.
Oh,
like,
wow.
So,
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. It's just an idea. It's an observation, but there are these different types of play that kids engage in often when they're feeling overwhelmed. And when they're really into it, going back to that listening, if we're really listening, we can get all of these clues about what a child knows and what a child doesn't know about any given situation, any given, you know, action event. And if we allow that play to happen, we can see them working through it in this subconscious sort of way. And that's an amazing opportunity for us to stand back and really hear, know where they're at, but also, if it's appropriate, step in and interact through play too, and potentially give some strategies and guide and go through that whole process that we just talked about, but within the play, the language of play. And that's an amazing opportunity. We can talk about anything that way, and right. it's not overwhelming. It's this very safe, objective place. And if the child is at a point where they're not ready to talk about specifics in that play, abstract place, they're still picking up these strategies for coping that they can apply at their own level. And if they are making connections, that's great. Mm-hmm. They're still learning the strategies. And if they've had an experience, a very direct experience with something, this is an outlet. It's an escape. So, you know, play is very, very powerful. It's so essential. And we, you know, unfortunately, you know, in schools and even at home, you know, we seem to be limiting that time, you know, allowing for that time to just play. We still think of it as this thing that's frivolous, but, it's the child's work. It's really important work. It's practicing to be an adult. It's therapeutic. It's really a huge part of being a child and being an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all play pretend. I mean, you know, we're
right.
the roles that we've taken on as our grown up selves. You know, there's a lot of playing pretend in there, I think.
Yes.
You know, and we kind of need to accept that. And if we do, then we start to have more of a lucid dreams sort of experience too. You know. We can, again, can't control the actions of others, but we can influence with our own actions. Not that it's just about, you know, influencing others. We can, you know, influence ourselves, you know.
Right.
But
sure. And then on that idea of play, at Nanny Palooza, you spoke about three different types of play, especially in response to action events. So I'd love to hear more about those.
Sure. Well, I started thinking about these, and I had been aware of them, but I started giving them more specific names. And again, this is the sort of thing where other, you know, other educators think about this sort of thing a lot. So
right.
There's some of this might sound familiar. You might have heard it in a different way, or maybe it's something that you naturally think about. But it's all good. But it was we had just gotten to Baltimore from Chicago, and Chicago can be a pretty violent place. But it was right around the time of Freddie Gray, and his death, and Baltimore was, you know, very upset,
right.
and it was in the news constantly, and kids were picking up on it. You know, they were seeing it on the screens in the background. It, you know, for the families that just always have some sort of media going on, they don't think about, you know, what the kids might be seeing, not seeing. And even if the media was turned off, you know, parents chat with each other, they talk with each other, teachers are talking with each other, other students maybe have heard, you know, heard part of the story, and they were sharing their understanding of it. And just that energy, you know, kids pick up on those feelings. They perceive, you know, in a way that's, it's another one of their gifts, you know.
Right.
There's been no conditioning yet. Well, there has been, but
right,
there's
less.
That empathy, yeah, less. That empathy, that natural human empathy is so strong with young children, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, the kids that I worked with, my own children, everyone was very much aware of everything that was going on at that point. And we were seeing types of play in the classrooms and in the playgrounds. And a lot of parents and educators were like, "No, we don't play that way." Mm-hmm. And to be more specific, you know, it was lots of bang, 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 you're dead sort
right.
of play. And there's three levels of it for me,
mm-hmm.
and not just with that specific action event, but with any major violent thing, you know, the Las Vegas tragedy. Way too many in between and every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see kids who just want to feel power. You know, young children don't have a lot of power in their lives in general. They don't have a lot of choice.
Right.
We try to give that to them, you know, little things like, you know, picking, you know, laying out three different types of shirts that they can put on in the morning, you know, little,
mm-hmm.
little choices that, you know, give them a sense of power. But, you know, so often, you know, we all know the kids that want to pretend to be dinosaurs or superheroes or ninjas or, you know, or grown-ups pretend to be grown-ups. And, you know, the quote, you know, the idea of the quote good guy or quote, you know, bad guy, what that means, you know, the extremes again. But often that play is a violent type of play, just trying to take power, you know, swinging that stick around like a sword or like a gun. And yeah, you know, again, if we're seeing that they're about to hurt someone or hurt themselves physically or emotionally, you know, pretend play is still very scary. Those feelings
mm-hmm.
still come up. Like that's important to address too. Yeah, we need to draw that line and stop that play, but not just, you know, slap on the hand and end the conversation, you know, say, we don't play with guns that way, even pretend guns. And here is why. Here's
mm-hmm.
what our school
mm-hmm.
philosophy is. Here's what our beliefs are and traditions are as a family. You know, this is why as a society, we follow these sort of rules. You know, have that conversation. And again, you know, you might have to change the way that you deliver that depending upon where the child's at developmentally, if they're ready
right.
to talk about it, or if they need to play about it, you can still play those sort of big ideas. And it's much harder. That's the other thing. It takes time and it's emotionally draining, you know, but it's really, it's important to engage in that. So there's that power, dramatic, violent play that can happen. And then there's the reflective, subconscious stuff that we already kind of talked about, you know, the stuff that we have to interpret. Mm-hmm. You know, the stuff that happens in the block corners. You know, a block can be whatever you want it to be.
Yes. That's one of the things that's so beautiful about them.
That's absolutely, absolutely. A whole lot happens in that block corner, you know. Math and physics and social structures. And this is my, you know, everyone has a 9/11 story. This is mine, and it ties into this subconscious sort of play. Again, a huge action event. We were in Chicago. It was my second year teaching in the classroom, the preschool classroom, and we were in a suburb, obviously very far away from New York. But at that time, all the big cities, we didn't know what was going to happen, you know. Right. And everyone was on edge. A lot of families weren't sending their kids into school. The teachers would stand close to each other and you know, naturally talk about things and try to get stuff out. You know, we were listening to the radio in the car. We were seeing the footage again and again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because there weren't as many children in our little school, there's four classrooms at that preschool and daycare. Mm-hmm. The students were all in one room. So there's some scaffolding going on, unintentional scaffolding going on.
Right.
But every single one of those kids, between 3 and 5, they were all in the block corner, and they were all building tall structures, and they were all knocking them down. The cars were out, too. They were crashing into stuff, and they were building up these structures and knocking them down again and again and again. And the teacher that I studied under, her name was Kathy Passois, and she looked over, and she saw this, and she stopped herself, and she's like, I need to engage with the students. Mm-hmm. This is obviously, you know, responsive to what's going on. And sure, it's you know, in a block corner, it's nothing new for kids to make towers and knock them down, like, you know. But what was so specific about it was, you know, the kids, the looks on their faces, like, it wasn't a focused type of play. It wasn't being silly. It wasn't angry. It wasn't sad. It was just like, it was like a spin out, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just stuck in this repetitive thing in small groups. And she sat down and she didn't say, stop doing that. You know, she just sat with the children, you know. And I remember her putting her hand on one little girl's back and just rubbing her back as she was doing it. And eventually the girl just laid her head on Kathy's lap. And, you know, eventually that play moved on to other types of play. But she just let them let it out.
Yeah.
But if you think about that time, you know, like, and this is really important going back to media, those images were being shown again and again and again. And if, you know, as an adult, we knew, you know, this is a rerun. This is them showing it again so that we can try to understand what's happening. We can review it. You know, they're telling the story again and again and again. But for a young child, seeing it on a screen, and not just that specific event, but, you know, any event, all of the, you know, scary stuff we see on the news, they show it again and again and again. And for a young child, it's met with the same intensity.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Chip Donahue, who is a professor at Erickson Institute in Chicago, Graduate School for Early Childhood Development, mm-hmm. and works for the Fred Rogers Center as a senior fellow and is partnered with Macy and really knows his stuff, you know, when it comes to screen time and the new age that we're in,
right.
Said, you know, children at that time, they experienced more than one 9/11. They, you know, they experienced hundreds of 9/11s again and again and again, you know. And you, like, think about that, you know. That's
right.
How overwhelming that was for that, you know, that generation of young children. So we really have to be so aware of the screens around us, you know, and what we're exposing our kids to, and knowing when to just turn it off, you know.
Yes.
Get off of, even for us, get off of Facebook. Like, we don't, you know, it doesn't make us a bad human being not to watch these things. You know, we know what's happening. We can make some choices on how we can, you know, send hopes and prayers, and then also some action, you know, actions to help support in whatever way we can, you know.
Right.
But not to go too far off. But so yeah. that type of play, you know, you can see so much, you know, in that subconscious sort of play, that reflective play. And the same process, the same method that we talked about earlier with engaging and listening and accepting and, you know, finding solutions, you know, we can apply it in that type of play too, but we have to allow it to happen. And then the last kind, and this is a really hard one for a lot of people because it hurts. It's recreation play. Mm-hmm. It's a child that knows exactly what's happened. Mm-hmm. And acts out the parts, you know, playing the parts of real people, you know, playing the part of a shooter, playing a part of a victim. And that's, you know, heartbreaking. Yes. For us. But again, it's still an opportunity to step in and say, I can see, you know, exactly what happened, and we need to talk about it, or we need to play about it. And look at all those different perspectives and, again, have a conversation about what's socially acceptable and what's not, and how, you know, some people, you know, their minds are very, very ill, or they've experienced horrible things that make them make decisions that are not socially acceptable. But we're very healthy people because look how we're dealing with our feelings right now. We're talking it out. We're playing it out, but we're not hurting anyone else. We're not hurting ourselves. You know, it's important to talk about the hard things and play about the hard things, and not just
push them down.
Push them down. Yeah, right. And that there's a, you know, a lot of us do that. If what happens when you push it down and you bury it down and you hold it inside, it's got to come out.
Right. It will find a way.
It will find a way. When I talk about this, when I'm doing conferences, I draw a picture, a really abstract picture, so that, you know, the participants can, you know, project themselves, their own children, into it. But I draw a very abstract picture of a child, and then I draw a big star shape, which represents the action event above that child. And I draw a line coming down to the child, and I say, you know, when a child's affected by an action event, big or small, the first thing that happens is a big question mark, a big why, a big what is this, a big what's happening. And then the next thing that pops into the child's head is me, mm-hmm. exclamation point, me. How does this affect me? And it repeats. It's a why me sort of process. And if there's nobody there to guide, that original action is going to influence the behavior, you know, why me, holding it in. And that behavior is going to reflect at some level what the original action was. So it's really important as caregivers, you know, if that kid's fortunate enough to have a caregiver step in and provide these strategies and these methods and help them work through these problems through play, and let them know that it's okay to talk, it's okay to play about these things.
Yeah.
And with all that, sorry, that's all heavy stuff, but I just want to throw in, I want to throw in, you know, I have this idea that for the kids that maybe don't have an adult right next to them, or that adult isn't fully present, because of a variety of good reasons, you know, they're affected by that action event too. Maybe there's illness. Maybe there's who knows what, you know, but they're not fully present. And you know, unfortunately, sometimes not present at all. I sincerely think it's possible that in today's age, we can use screens in a very healthy way. We can present caring adults. Like for me, when I was a little kid, you know, like Mr. Rogers, or for mm-hmm. other kids, you know, Captain Kangaroo or LeVar Burton or Sherry Lewis, or there's hundreds of them, you know. But there are these real adult beings on the other side of the screen, and if we can show that it's not an actor, that it's a real caregiver, and talk directly through the screen, even if it's not an interactive screen, but, you know, share these sort of methods, model these sort of behaviors, I think we can influence that child in the same healthy way. And that's what I'm trying to do with what looks like a good old fashioned kids show. It's hopefully a lot more than that.
Yeah. So, gosh, you are just segueing so beautifully.
Oh, good.
I'm in the passenger seat over here, and I love it.
Well, good.
You're driving through this just wonderfully, and I really enjoy it. So yes, tell me and the listeners more about your show. I've already exposed some of my nanny kids to it, and they're really responding. So tell us more.
Okay. Well, it's called Danny Joe's Treehouse. And it's the type of communication that is honestly, it's kind of a tough sell for TV, for modern day television. And you know, there might be some pushback from that statement. You know, people in the industry that say, oh, of course not. You know, look at Sesame Street. Look at what's happening on Sprout Network. You know, there's plenty of real caregivers, and that's true. But, you know, if you start to talk about the sort of things that we were just talking about in a kids program, there is a concern I think it comes down to funding and yes. viewership and things like that. And I might be completely wrong. But I've tried very hard to break into that industry for a long time. And I found myself just constantly asking permission from someone else to present these programs that I had created over years and years. I've got just hundreds of scripts. But I was just sitting on them. You know, I wasn't doing anything with them. I was using them in the classroom, and I knew that they worked. And they started changing. You know, they were less scripts and more like talking points. And then they were more like outlines, and it became more about the listening to the individual kids, and they were steering the conversation. I was just facilitating it. And I realized, well, I can, you know, I don't need to wait for anyone to let me do that. I'm fortunate enough to have a smartphone, which is a little portable TV station. I can record, I can distribute through social media. And, that's what I started doing. I just started holding up my phone, like selfie style. I had made some pre-recorded pieces back in Chicago when I was trying to find what that voice was, but that was an early version of Danny Joe's Treehouse that was more a nature-based, more traditional, you know, a 1-2-3 punch sort of, you know, here's a thought. Is the answer this, this, or this? And then you reveal what the answer is. You know, it's kind of a traditional beat sort of thing. And that really wasn't what I wanted to do. Instead I wanted to have a conversation. So I just started having these really open-ended conversations, pre-recording them onto a video on my phone and then uploading them onto, YouTube. And I got some good response with that. And I started doing tests with different types of environments, you know, being outside in nature, having just a white backdrop behind me and using very, very simple puppets to engage the child, and got really good feedback from that. It was really easy to connect with the child. But with the adult, it was a little bit harder because the adult wanted to know, you know, we were talking about trust earlier. The adult wanted to know, who is this guy? What is
right.
he? Right. You know, is he... He's on the screen, and that's suspicious.
Right.
And it should be. You should question who your caregivers are in real life and on screen. You have to earn that trust. But I found through consistency, showing up, you know, as often as I could, and by oddly enough, dressing in slightly brighter clothing and putting on a bow tie. You know, I started to feel more like an old-fashioned kids show host.
Isn't that fascinating?
It really. And there's a nostalgia there. You know, it's like if I can, you know, are you a clown? Are you a, you know, like,
right.
are you a Captain Kangaroo? Are you a Mr. Rogers? Are you a, you know, what are you? What can I associate with you? You know, So and I love that period of early television with live action, and not just Mr. Rogers, but all of the local kid show hosts, you know. And so I really started looking at their style, and I saw that, you know, early television, when they were just starting to figure it out, they didn't have any money. So all of their, like me, so all of their sets, you know, they were made out of like stretched canvas and cardboard and soft puppets. And I thought, well, gosh, I can do that. So I start, and you know, I have an arts background. So, oh, good. I get to use a little bit of my skills in painting. And I started making a set for myself in my kids' playroom. Brody and Flynn were kind enough to share their play space in the basement with me.
That and I built a kind.
Yes. And they got, and you know, they got a treehouse out of it in the basement too.
Right.
So it was, we were all pretty happy. But so I built up a simple set, and I started using it was right around the time that Facebook started offering live broadcasts. And it was something that I had wanted to do. I wanted to see if, you know, could I actually talk through the screen with the families at home. And you know, it's not a two-way camera, but the comment section on the side, parents would co-view, which is very important. They'd have to participate. The parents had to be involved, and they would listen to what the children were saying, and they would write down the responses from the children. And then I could respond directly to Charlie in the California or Karen in Baltimore or wherever, and I could talk to them directly about what they wanted to talk about, and the puppets could too. And then before and after those more traditional shows, I could do a virtual parent-teacher conference and just talk to the parents and say, all right, these are the objectives I'm trying to hit. What do you think? Am I doing it? What do I need to change? And what's your experience with this topic? And, you know, what would you like to see? And it became a conversation. So it wasn't one way. I was really interacting in a way that seemed like a natural progression to what the early kid show hosts used to do, but nobody was doing. And I grew an audience that's small on scale to you know, the big shows, but I know every single one of my families. You know, we're all part of a community. We built the treehouse together, and I know where the kids are at developmentally. I know where the parents are at, and some of them have met, you know, face to face, and a lot of them just online. But we all connect with each other, and it's not just me talking with the parents. You know, the parents start to talk with each other too. The kids talk with each other too.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Amazing thing. Yeah, yeah. Just this cool mix up of, you know, very traditional kids show, kids TV show, and very modern, reflective of our present day technology, an appropriate use of it.
Right.
You know, reality TV, if it was good and decent.
Yes.
You know?
If it actually was
actual reality.
Yeah.
Right. So that was great. And that was last season. That was last year. And moving to this year, I've realized that it's amazing in the moment, like all those connections happen. But I found out after I would save those videos and transfer them over to YouTube, people who came to the individual episodes later on, individual kids would get confused because I would be talking through the screen to the one child, and then I would start calling that one child Charlie, and you know, what are you talking about, Danny Joe? And I would lose them. I would lose that deeper connection. So this year the plan is to still do the parent, teacher, caregiver, nanny, grown up, you know, conference, and talk about what the objectives are going to be, and ask for feedback, and then incorporate that into a recorded, we're going to pre-record the actual episode, and then put it up a little bit later down the line. So there'll still be the interactive stuff. Children can still participate in the grown-up conference, but for the actual show part of it, That'll be a pre-recorded. It'll be live to tape, so it'll still feel like a live show.
Right.
But I'm trying to figure out what the balance is still. I'm still experimenting.
Mm-hmm. Which is such an exciting thing, and one that we don't have access to. You know, you certainly can't give feedback to Yo Gabba Gabba.
Right.
And so what an exciting opportunity for caregivers and parents and anyone that, that works closely with children.
I think so. I mean, it really does become our thing. And certainly there, you know, there, every kids show and adult sitcom and drama, you know, there are the accompanying websites and Twitter feeds, and there is an element of interactiveness, but this is, feels very different. It feels very personal. And real. My tagline, it's become a tagline. It was just something I used to say. But it was, I'm attempting to bring a human voice back to children's media, a real human voice.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just missing. And it won't be, just my voice, you know, it'll be the voices of the parents, but I'm also, bringing in other caregivers this upcoming season, other real human beings, not actors, but real teachers and real artists to come in and interact with me, but also interact with the puppets. Because last year I would, like on the screen, I was operating the set and the lights and the sound. I had a bunch of pulleys going. And I would pop up the puppets and I would do the voice of the puppet, but you could see me doing the voice of the puppet. And I didn't mind that because I think it's important for children to see, you know, how it works so that they can do it too. Like, I don't want to trick anyone, you know, if they're young enough, I guess what I'm trying to say is even with adults, like if you're invested in believing in it, you don't notice the guy or the girl talking, you just see the puppet and that person disappears. And if you're at the point where you're like, oh, I see what he or she is doing. I think I can do that too. You know, that's great too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can speak to all the different levels at the same time. But anyway, I'll be bringing in other caregivers this year, and we're going to start recording everything not this weekend but next.
Wonderful. And how can people watch? How can people interact?
Give us
all the details.
Sure. Well, to interact, this second season, it will still be on Facebook Live. Go to Danny Joe's Treehouse, and Joe's is J-O-E-S, Danny Joe's Treehouse, two separate words. Okay. And go to Facebook and you'll find me and like it.
Mm-hmm.
You can subscribe to the YouTube channel too by the same name, but on YouTube, when I do a live video, I'll give an announcement of when one's coming up, and then you just participate the day of. And then the pre-recorded stuff will go up onto YouTube a couple weeks later. I'm going to try to get a few episodes together before I start uploading them.
Great.
If it's okay, I'd like to make the special announcement that I'm very excited about.
Yes.
So
I'm excited too.
The first episode, which will be on the 21st of October, that's a Saturday. And we'll do the live broadcast at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The special guest will be Mr. David Newell. And Mr. David Newell was the gentleman that played Mr. McFeely on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood for 50 years. And he's coming over to be on our show, not as Mr. McFeely. My show has no connection to, other than being greatly influenced by Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. There's no partnership or anything. I'm not connected to the Fred Rogers Company at all. David Newell is an individual. I've known him for coming up on 10 years now. First met him at the Field Museum. I organized a sweater drive.
Oh, wow.
And called their PR department when they were still Family Communications before they became the Fred Rogers Company. And said, I'd like to learn more about your sweater drive. And Mr. McFeely called me back because he was their PR guy and had been for many, many, many years. So he came out as Mr. McFeely, and we did a sweater drive and did some live appearance stuff. He brought some of the original puppets, And we just started to get to know each other. And eventually I worked up enough courage to tell him about what I wanted to do. And he, on and off throughout the years, so he's given me feedback and encouragement. And I finally, worked up the courage to say, "Hey, David, would you want to be on my show?"
Yeah.
and he said, "Yes, sure." And so he's coming in on the 21st as his true self. He won't be speedy, speedy, fast Mr. McFeely. He's going to be David taking his time and encouraging us to slow down and really connect with each other.
That's so wonderful. I'm very excited to watch.
Thank you. I'm excited to see you,
yeah.
To know that you're there and find out what your questions are. And the episode will be recorded after the live broadcast. And then you can see the story on YouTube a couple weeks later.
Wonderful. So just to make sure that I'm understanding clearly and the listeners are,
sure.
Next Saturday, because this is Sunday now, we're recording beforehand, listeners, but this goes up on Sunday the 15th. So next Saturday the 21st,
mm-hmm.
viewers can tune in on YouTube, correct?
On I'm glad that you asked, on Facebook.
Great, okay.
Go to the Facebook page. Yeah.
Facebook page, great. So they can tune in on Facebook at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mm-hmm.
And
at the Danny Joe's Treehouse page.
Danny Joe's Treehouse page, which I will certainly put a link to on my Facebook, Chronicles of Nannius Facebook page. And yes, of course. And then you will do a live show with interaction, and then you will film one that you will broadcast later afterwards, correct?
Right. Correct. And my friend who actually has done improv said I should describe it like an improv show. It's
great.
It's like,
yeah.
When you go to a live improv show, you ask the audience for suggestions. The live broadcast is us asking the audience for suggestions and getting feedback. We end that broadcast. It's not a show. It's a discussion talking about what our topic's going to be.
Yeah.
And then we turn off the live broadcast. We look at all the feedback that we got and talk about what we talked about with all the families. And then we incorporate that into the outline that we put together with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turn on the fancy camera, and my wife Stephanie records it. And we play out the episode.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about that. So yes, as you're listening to this, mark your calendars, because I think that's just such a wonderful opportunity. And then you will be doing that every Saturday, or?
Well, we'll see. A lot of it depends on scheduling with the individuals, but the very next one is actually going to be the on the 22nd on Sunday.
Oh, okay,
in the afternoon at 2:30, and that's going to feature two local artists, Mr. Max and Mr. Root from Baby Beats. They're they're super cool, and they have a following with adults too. But Max is a beatboxer,
mm-hmm.
and Mr. Root is an MC. He's a beautiful singer. And they are going to, the main character that we're going to focus on this season is Teddy.
Uh-huh.
And Teddy is going to come into being on the program, and we're going to see Teddy starting to deal with, different responses to all the common concerns that we talked about at the very, very beginning, back at the beginning of this episode, understanding the difference between shelter and home, you know, a home being the people around you, not just the structure that you live in, and clothing, and eventually getting into some much bigger ideas, and learning how to cope and how to be part of a community and how to control emotions, and all the other puppets all come into play, it's going to be really fun.
Oh, that's such an exciting opportunity for caregivers and parents, and I'm so excited for you, because I think that's. Yeah, it's just going to be great. I'm so excited.
Yay! Yeah, me too.
Well, wonderful. So yes, listeners, be sure that you go like Danny Joe's Treehouse on Facebook and certainly on YouTube as well. But that is a way to find out more details as the season goes on about when recordings will happen and when those interactive live broadcasts will happen. Because I think that that's just such a unique thing that to be able to participate in. And so, yes, wonderful. And if you can't remember, if you're driving in your car and you can't write it down, then go to the Chronicles of Narnia page, which I'm sure you've already liked, and and you will find all the details written down there for you. So if you're driving and you can't write it down right now, don't worry. It's okay. Just go to Chronicles of Narnia, and then I'll have all the details there for you throughout the week. So, yes. Well, is there anything else that you would like to say or promote or anything else?
I don't think so. We're building a website, so all of these things will be in one space. But that's taking a little bit of time. That's that's down the line. We're still very new. You know, we're growing.
Right.
You know what we could do to wrap up? It's something that we did at Nanny Palooza. Do you want to talk to King? Do you want to do the I'm the Boss of You song?
Yes, I would love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the setup is this all came out of body integrity. I used to bring a very simple little King puppet to schools. And the first time I brought the King puppet out, a little girl said, "You're not the boss of me." and it kept evolving, and it became about, you know, we take care of our own bodies, and it's okay to say stop. If you don't like something, if you don't like the way someone's treating your body or your feelings, you're the boss of you. Mm-hmm. You have lots of grown-ups that care about you and love you and help you to take care of your mind and body. But even with the grown-ups, if there's something that you don't like, it's okay to say, stop, I don't like that. So the song that we teach the kids before King comes out is, I'm the boss of me, I'm the boss of me. I take care of my mind and body because I'm the boss of me. And then the King comes out and says, "Ooh, hello, everyone. Yes, 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 yes. I have an important proclamation, you'll see. I'll sing it. Me, 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 me. Everyone look at me. I'm the boss of you, and I'm the boss of you. I tell you what to do, because I'm the boss of you. Yay! You're welcome. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wait, but King...
yes, my dear. Yes, you may bow to your king.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for that
opportunity. You're
but
you're welcome.
Mm-hmm. But I'm struggling because I know that...
Because you're not a king like me, Maya, but that's okay.
Well, you're yes, you're right.
You're my subject. Yes.
But I am the boss of me.
No, you misunderstood the lyrics, you see. It's I'm the boss of you, you see.
But it's just not true. I'm the boss of me, and you are the boss of you.
You know what part of the problem is? It's Danny Joe again. King often only communicates through song. I really feel like you should probably sing the song.
Oh, I can sing with you if you want. You're right. I would
and if you're
that.
Listening in your car... If you want to feel empowered, you can sing along with us.
Yes.
Too. It's I'm the boss of me. I'm the boss of me. I take care of my mind and body.
Because
I'm the boss of me. Well, I completely disagree, but I'll see you later.
Goodbye, oh, he's gone. King.
We got rid of the king.
Oh, yes, for now.
But you know what? That king, we talk about this a lot. Actually, one of the little boys on the show watched this and wanted to understand why King is the way he is. It can be really frustrating. Mm-hmm. But there's always a root cause, even with those kings that come and go, you know. The big blue sky above has been around a lot longer. And other kings will come and other queens will come and... you know, you don't want that action event to influence your behavior. So stay strong out there, and we'll be okay.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was just wonderful. Well, that was such a wonderful high note to leave off on. And I really, really appreciate you taking time to speak with me about all of this. It's all very helpful.
I appreciate you talking with me, Martha. I really do. And I appreciate all the work that you do as a nanny and as a host and how you share all these resources with others. It's important work. So thank you.
Thank you. And listeners, be sure to tune in to Danny Joe's Treehouse. Like I said, I've already used it with some nanny kids, and the response I have gotten, they've already started singing "I'm the Boss of Me," which is so delightful. And I've been seeing it getting incorporated into their play, and it's wonderful. Cool. So thank you. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Chronicles of Narnia is produced and hosted by Martha Reddick. Artwork by Noni Amadon. Theme music by Brad Kemp. Find him at secondbedroomstudio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chronicles of Narnia and on Twitter at Narnia Podcast. To contact us, email chroniclesofnarnia@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
This show has been brought to you by Machine Culture.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.